Hey there, beautiful people. Welcome to Fantie, the podcast for all those complex and complicado conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am chosen and called, Jarrett Hill.
Okay, chosen and called. You chosen and called. Okay. Well, I'm just...
I think it's actually called and chosen. I did that backwards, but you get it. You get it.
Okay, it's... Okay. All right. Okay. And I am entertainment editor and authoress of We See Each Other, A Black Trans Journey Through TV and Film, out May 9th, available for pre-order right now. Trayvell Anderson, thank y'all so much for joining us. Coming up on the show, we have a very special guest to dive into kind of a hot topics cornucopia, if you will, about beauty and skincare. Stay tuned for that. But first, we have a... It's a pass the popcorn. It's a recurring conversation that we end up having on this show because some of y'all, because I can't use that language no more. There's a phrase in Historically Black Phrases, also available for pre-order, coming out in September that you should check out that I want to use here, but I'm not going to use here.
Well, I just use it now. I mean, you didn't teed it up.
No, go to the A segment, Jerry.
I really wanted you to use it because I wasn't quite sure what you were talking about, but fine. I'm calling this past the popcorn. Portia Williams is a journalist, Trayvell Anderson exclaimed. We'll get into that in a moment.
Well, hold on now.
In recent weeks, there's been a conversation hitting the trends, or as Sherry Shepherd might call it, flooding the feeds. Starting fights on podcasts like this one. Trayvell and I see this story with completely different lenses, and we're going to argue about it.
Oh.
First, I have to take you way, way back. Picture it. April 2021, Los Angeles. Actually, we can take it back further to, well, I mean, I can't remember the specific date, but it was like 2018 or 19. Trayvell and I hosted a prolific, preeminent, and progressive panel. You like all that? He's a writer.
I do, for me.
Called What is a Journalist? And it was either 2018 or 19. I can't remember, and I couldn't find the link, so that's not important. But we were wrestling with the expanding title of journalist and the many ways that it's becoming kind of compromised. Then in 2021, working on Senate Bill 98, state legislation defending the rights of journalists covering civil unrest and protests here in California, we were tasked with this question again by law enforcement. Now, here in 2023, we're facing another one of this industry's bigger, more challenging questions. Is Portia Williams a journalist? On a recent episode of The Real Housewives of... Most of these people aren't really married. Portia Williams argues with Candace Dillard Bassett about whether or not she's a journalist. Portia cites her job, specifically hosting Dish Nation, a celebrity gossip show, and contrasts that with Candace's communications education. While Portia says she's, quote, not Googling anything, which...
Oh, God.
I don't know what that means. She should probably Google what a journalist is, except for the fact that she'd probably be justifying in saying such a wild thing. You know we like definitions around here. So by definition, Portia could argue maybe. Mm-mm. Let's look at the definition. Oxford says a journalist is a person who writes for newspapers, magazines, or news websites, or prepares news to be broadcast. Merriam-Webster says, a person engaged in journalism, especially a writer or editor for a news medium. Wikipedia actually, well, we feel how we feel about Wikipedia as a source, did have interesting language for the definition. It says, a journalist is an individual that collects or gathers information in form of text, audio, or pictures, processes them into a newsworthy form, and disseminates it to the public. The act or process mainly done by the journalist is called journalism. That said, I think the word that is consistent through these definitions that really makes it difficult is news, right? What we consider news is an important factor in that question. So Trayvell, I want to get a sense from you. Why do you insist that Portia Williams is a journalist?
First of all, that is not what I said, okay? First of all... Okay, and you gonna stop besmirching my name on this here YouTube, okay, and over the airwaves.
I really just wanted that clip to exist so we could just put it out.
But Portia certainly feels as if she is a journalist, and that is an interesting take that I disagree with. And it's not actually about the news element that I think, you know, that you highlighted in those different definitions and that I think other people would try to decipher, you know, is Dish Nation doing news? I'm not even going to wrestle with that because, you know, there are so many people who are journalists who don't do news.
Mm-hmm.
In the ways that we might define news, right? For example, as an entertainment journalist, right? It is not often in broader, you know, in prevailing estimation, it is not often seen as us entertainment journalists doing news, right? But the reason why Portia Williams is not a journalist is because, actually, you know what? I was about to just dive deep on her real quick, like, and I'm gonna pull back. I'm gonna pull back, and I have some follow up questions that would help us all, I think, get to the fact of whether Portia is a journalist. And that would first be, does she feel beholden to any sort of journalistic ethic?
So that, to me, is really the distinction that we have to discuss, right?
Because, right, in the midst of this swirling, right, around her calling herself a journalist, she was recently on The Breakfast Club dogging Tamron Hall, who is a journalist, for her experience on the Tamron Hall show. You know, she's promoting a book or something. I don't know. And she did not like the line of questioning that Tamron Hall did. DJ Envy or whoever, I think that's the man's name, on the show, also talked about not enjoying Tamron's line of questioning. And I will just say, you know, one, celebrities, Tamron Hall is a journalist. The folks over on The Breakfast Club are not journalists. They Say interview, that. But they're not journalists. And it's no shade, and it's no high. I'm not trying to put it in a hierarchy type situation. Everybody got their role to play, right? Everybody got their role to play, but you're not a journalist because you don't feel beholden to the ethical ramifications that we, who hold on to that title of journalist, hold ourselves to. Even as we interrogate some of those things as well, you know what it is.
Come on.
So that would be it for me. And so I need her to sit down somewhere and hush up.
The journalistic ethics piece of it is really the piece that I feel like is the most important. Like, if you don't have some set of standards on what you will and won't do, on how you will and won't report, on the ways that you engage your source, the all kinds of different things that we have to consider as journalists. If you're not engaged in, if you don't even have like a basic awareness, because I'm not even really clear on like what Portia's awareness of journalistic ethics would be as opposed to her employment of them. But like that's really where it's a challenge for me.
I was just about to say something really shady. I'm still going to say it, but I want to recognize that my spirit told me not to say it, and I'm going to say it anyway, which is she just learned a few years ago that the Underground Railroad ain't had. And that's, you know, I don't want to be shady because, you know, we can, you can learn a lot in a few years, right? You can learn a lot in a few years. You know, this is the bad thing about being, you know, somewhat public figures, right? Who end up learning in public, as we do on this show every week, right? Is that somebody is gonna pull a clip.
Oh, right. Sherry Shepherd is never going to live down thinking the earth was flat for just a moment on The View in that first week.
Right. Or somebody will always pull a clip to remind you. Now, I just did it in this situation on Ms. Portia, but that's not the point. All I'm saying is, I wanted to say this before we go. Also, it's about the journalistic ethics. For me, it's also about the rigor that comes for those who consider ourselves journalists in the work that we do. What do I mean by rigor? I mean the processes of fact checking. I mean the research that goes into, you know, navigating stories. Oftentimes, these folks who are on, who are in positions like Portia has on a show like Dish Nation, they are reading a packet of information that a producer or an intern or somebody who has not them has actually prepared and researched.
Maybe a real journalist.
Maybe someone who considers themselves to be a real journalist. Maybe not, because, you know, they traffic in that Shade Room-esque type of space in terms of, you know, rumor and comment section beefs, et cetera, but there's a rigor that I think those of us who are journalists also participate in that is also deeply important to the work that we do. And so many folks wouldn't know rigor if it slapped them in the face.
Wow. Well, from getting slapped in the face by a hard R to getting into the beauty, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're getting into...
Well, what a transition.
You said rigor, and I was like, there's a hard R reference I have to make here. I just don't know what it was. And at the last moment, you gave it to me. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get into beauty with a fantastic guest that you may or may not know, but you're going to love her nonetheless. Darian's coming up next.
There is nothing quite like the smell of fresh baked bread coming out of the oven. Now, what if I told you you could get all of the delicious with none of the time and work involved? Well, guess what? You can with the folks from Wild Grain. Wild Grain is the first ever bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries. And every item bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less. You'll never run the risk of getting bored with Wild Grain. They're constantly adding new seasonal and limited time special items for you to try. Plus, for every new member, Wild Grain donates 6 meals to the Greater Boston Food Bank so you can eat good and do good all at the same time.
A little peek behind the curtain. They just sent us the update for us to get more Wild Grain things delivered so that we can try the new stuff. And, like, I got really excited because I...
Of course you did.
I really enjoyed what they sent us last time. I still had like a loaf of the sourdough and my mom was just here visiting and she wanted me to make a bread pudding for her. And so like I used the sourdough and it was so fantastic. Wild Grain has really, really awesome things to offer you. Plus, for a limited time, you can get $30 off your first box. Plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/fantie to start your subscription. You heard me. Free croissants in every box and $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/fantie. That's wildgrain.com/fantie, or you can use promo code FANTIE at checkout.
Welcome back, beautiful people. The great songwriter once said, beauty's only skin deep. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beauty's only skin deep. Oh, yeah.
Because you have been singing this all throughout producing this episode, and I did not expect to have to deal with it again today.
You're welcome. Popularized by The Temptations, that was written in the 60s by Norman Whitfield and Edward Holland Jr. Fast forward 50 some odd years and conversations about beauty and skincare, and especially its intersection with culture at large, have perhaps never been as multi-layered and complex as they are today. Not to mention, if you call yourself trying to take care of your skin, they out here saying that you need 12 steps and 42 products to look younger and get a special glow and look like Angela Bassett doing the thing. Okay? Side story. I went to a facialist recently, my first time, and she asked me about my skincare routine. Now, like I said, I don't do all them steps because I ain't got time for all that. I just can't. And I told her I use CeraVe. I've also heard it pronounced CeraVe. I'm not sure which is right.
Neither one, but okay.
We will ask our guest today. Anyway, I say I use that, you know, wash my face or whatever, and do a little moisturizing. And then, you know, we did an episode over the holidays with Donnie from Cafe De La Hue, And so I use one of the little oil concoctions that he sells over there. All right. And that's it. You know, very simple, you know, and you know, it just looks all right, I like to think. And she was shocked, right? Because, you know, my skin be doing what it be doing with all that rigmarole. Now, around that same time, I'm going somewhere with this, I promise you. Around that same time, Jared here became a skin influencer.
Hold on.
Okay? If you follow him.
No.
If you follow him on Instagram, okay, you know what I mean, okay? And I said to myself, oh, no, they done got him. Lord, he done turned into a skin influencer. Background for Darian, Jared did some like IG lives and stuff with people talking about his skincare routine and like all that other stuff. You know, he was given very, you know, YouTube with the products on the hands and everything.
I would never.
Anyway, okay. And so, when we were thinking of episodes we wanted to do for this season, something on beauty and skincare was near the top of the list, and particularly something about what our discourse around beauty and skincare today says about culture at large. There was literally one person that came to mind as a potential guest, and she joins us today. She's a fabulous journalist specializing in all things beauty at the intersection of pop culture and the politics. Darian Simone Harvin, welcome to Fanti.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. We should say Darian also was a featured panelist at our NABJLA Media Summit that we had a couple weeks ago. So shout out to her. Follow her. Follow studio.simone. Everything. We'll talk about it later.
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead, Jared.
Well, I should also say I was just going through all the photos of the event and you and I both had on the same like color block.
Did we?
As I was scrolling through, I was like, oh, is that me? Oh, no, that's another light-skinned person in an olive green jacket with a black shirt. I was just
there we go. There we go. There we go. There we go.
Right? We all look alike. Right. And are probably related. Okay. So I think the first thing that we'd love to touch on here is kind of getting a sense from you how you see the distinctions between beauty and skincare and like how they are different. Because I see them distinctly different.
Yeah. Oh, that's such an interesting question. The kind of the distinction between beauty and then skincare. And actually, I feel like I can use it to almost like in reference to my career and the way I feel like I've tried to cover beauty in relation to the other. I think that for me, and here's some background for the folks who are just now getting introduced to me, but it's like Travelle and I know each other from the newsroom world, from the news and publishing world, covering national current events, breaking news, politics, tech, sports, like really all of it. And so I really came from that world as a social media editor, had always just really been into trends, conversation, knew the and understood the importance of pop culture, and also like Black folks' like voice within pop culture. And so I started to get more into skincare myself, just experimenting at Sephora, you know, perusing, buying things I didn't need. Growing up, you know, my mom was a hairstylist. And so, you know, I was like into beauty. I was into beauty, but I started to develop this new fascination. I started to write about beauty and familiarize myself more with the beauty media world and with the, and therefore like the beauty PR world. And really what you find out really quickly when you are going into, and when you want to write about beauty, is that it's all centered around brands, product launches, you know, tutorials, before and afters, things that are really quite frankly all around, yes, skincare, hair, nails, and makeup, but more specifically the sales of those things. And so I, you know, like this is now of no surprise to any of us, but I think for me, I kind of facing that reality and therefore what was expected of me as a writer in this world, I said to myself, interesting, I'm not particularly interested in this area. And this is almost like the area that like I would call skincare, like knowing about all the products, understanding the ingredients, even from like a scientific lens, knowing the latest launches, like knowing the latest celebrity brands or just brands in general. Like to me, that is like when you say like the distinction between beauty and skincare, skincare to me is very much a representation of the beauty of the beauty industry. And to me, when I hear beauty, I think of culture. I think of really beauty as an avenue to talk about culture in a way that I feel can include and involve literally all of us. In the sense of, I can watch a performance of Meg Thee Stallion, and what a music writer is going to write about is going to be different than what I'm going to write about in terms of Meg Thee Stallion, what she's wearing, how she's carrying herself, her hair, in a way that like goes beyond, oh, you know, this is the blend that she's wearing, and more of like, mm-hmm. how can we take the choices that Meg Thee Stallion is making of her own agency with her own body, around her own appearance, and how is she like reflecting who she really is to us, or who she wants to be? And so mm-hmm. I think, like, for me, when I think about beauty and skincare, skincare to me is like diving really into the business of beauty. It is the capitalism area, multi-million dollar world of like what we do. And so, and when I think of like beauty, I think that beauty is something that I can like make my own. I think that it's very expansive, and I really like to think of it from like a creative artistry place, and also from a place of like, let's talk about culture. Like, let's talk about these discussions and things that we really care about, in a way where it's like, yeah, this is what I'm into, you know, and I'm not like, mm-hmm. I'm not gonna like put myself down for that.
I love that. I, as you talked about going to a Megan Thee Stallion concert and the way that you would cover her and the distinctions between maybe a music journalist or someone who was covering other aspects of it, that resonated with me, because the way I think about beauty and skincare is similar, but not exactly the same. And I think about the distinctions between beauty and skincare. Beauty is to me about culture and like the images that were sold. I was just listening to a chapter in Jay Shetty's new book called 8 Rules of Love or Love Rules or something like that. And he was talking about how all of the images that we have in our mind tend to come from a handful of places, and a lot of them tend to be film and television. And the ideas that we have about love, the things that we want for our love, the things that we think are true about love or supposed to be about love come from that. And when I think about beauty, I think about the ways in which we have been kind of fed the ideas of what is beautiful, right? And for a long time, we've talked about that being a standard of a white woman. Oftentimes, right? The body of a white woman, the hair of a white woman, the skin of a white woman, the tone of a white, well, like white women have been the standard of beauty for a long time. And so when I think about beauty, I think about it through that lens. And when I think about skincare, I think about like self-care, right? And for me, skincare has been a way of like starting to take care of myself in a different kind of way. And skincare feels really universal and like distinct to the individual, because as you probably know better than any of us on this, in this conversation, like every person's individual skin experience is different, and the ways that we, the things that we need to take care of from day to day are different. And so like, that's how I kind of think about the distinctions between the two. I'm curious about how this intersection kind of came together for you and then like really flourished into what it has become for you now.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And I feel like there's still so much I want to do, and every day is almost like I want other people to be doing and joining, doing this work with me in a way that is like consistent and really robust, because I just think it's so fun, and I think that there's so much to be done that sometimes it really overwhelms me. But I say all that to say that I really honestly came up like to this intersection because I realized that, number one, like I personally was into it. And I also realized that, number two, I was not seeing the amount of work that I wanted to around the topic. One of the writers who I now consider a dear friend, but one writer who I had been following for a while was Arabelle Sicardi, who just had already had a robust background of talking about beauty and culture and power. And so I think that for me, it just feels like not only like a lane unexplored, and I don't mean that in like a venture capitalist, like, there's not enough of this way. Like, I don't mean it that way. I mean it literally more in the sense of like, this just beauty to me just feels like a new opportunity for us to rethink how we think about media, about image making, about all of these topics that I feel like I'm re-examining them through Studio Simone. I feel like I'm re-examining like, what can a media company look like, and what can the business model of it look like in a way where, you know, I'm not a beauty magazine where all of our income is based off of advertisements from beauty brands. Like, is there another way? Is there another way? And I feel like that's the question I've been asking myself now, because it does intertwine with art and with media, and kind of how I think of everything as entertainment now, you know? Like, to me, I feel like I feel like there's so many conversations. I don't know if y'all have dabbled, because I haven't been on Twitter like that, but I've been seeing conversations about like distinctions between journalists and bloggers and writers and like all these conversations.
Oh yes, honey.
And to me, I'm like, that's so crazy, because number one, remember when like your favorite writers today were called bloggers? In like how that term has evolved, and also how like media has evolved in this way where I don't mean it as a cop out, as in like it's all content and it's all entertainment, but in many ways I feel like the distinctions aren't really doing much for me. You really have to, I think, be like a critical thinker in like a way that is takes a lot more work. And so I feel like I've just been exploring all of these things through beauty, through current events, through culture.
You mentioned Studio Simone, so I want you to talk about it and tell the people what it is. But in addition to that, one of the questions I wanted to ask you was about like community in beauty. Like, when I think of beauty, I think of beauty salons. I think of going to the salon, being there all day, you know, somebody delivering you food because you can't get up, you know, and you got 12 bad kids just running around, just getting on your nerve, right?
Right, right.
But when I think of beauty today, I don't necessarily think of the community aspect. Shut up, Jared.
I'm so triggered.
I'm sorry, like being in the salon with mom.
I literally had a flashback. You can't get up. You can't move. You can't. What do you say? You can't move.
It was hitting for me. And then you mentioned like the bringing of the food because you can't get up. And I was like, it's too real.
Right. It's too much.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's too much.
But that's how it used to be. And I feel like now the community aspect, for me at least, feels different, or it manifests differently. So tell people about Studio Simone, and then talk a little bit about your estimation of like the role of community in beauty today.
See, this is such a good question, because I feel like the community element is what's most at stake right now within beauty, where it's like, oh, like when I really think about it, because talking about what Studio Simone is, and then I can talk more about community and beauty, because really I created Studio Simone because I was and am looking for community. Studio Simone is like a budding beauty media company and community where we are known for telling beauty stories at the intersection of politics and pop culture. So it's very much like taking my work, like articles that I've done, even my newsletter that I used to do that I'm trying to get back up and running, but it's like taking so many topics that are around dissecting like trends from the past, whether it's BBLs, whether it's talking about which is like a whole conversation from like, I don't know, like 2021, which seems like forever ago, or looking at conversations like, do you remember the Gorilla Glue?
Oh my God, we talked about it.
And like kind of like becoming a destination where people can both like see beauty happening in other areas of like digital culture or within sports. When we talk about Sha'Carri Richardson, or who is the LSU player? I'm blanking on her name. Angelica Reese.
Yes. Let me see.
Angel. Reese. Yes.
I love doing this with journalists, because journalists will really look and make sure that the name is right. I love it.
Oh my God.
I love it.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? Never. I
love it.
So, oh, okay. So now I remember what I was saying. Or taking, for example, somebody like Angel Reese, LSU basketball player, who called out how she is treated and spoken about differently because of how she looks, because she is too ghetto. And because she's a Black girl living in this world, she knows what you're actually saying. And so it's like, I created Studio Simone to talk with that girl. I'm not talking at white people. I'm not talking at really anyone. I am talking with a group of people who are very interested in dissecting culture and current events and also themselves in a way that feels more like community and more like we are communing around a similar interest of beauty. And we're into the brands, we're into the trends, like we're into makeup and skincare, but we also are like we're looking for something deeper. I think there's like a true curiosity to this person who I'm attracting. And I call them like the Studio Simone girl, where it's like, I feel like I'm shaping this aesthetic, sure, but I'm more like curating like the mindset of who this person is. And because of that, because I'm shaping like a beauty media platform and really like a lifestyle brand, I'm shaping it around this element of beauty and community. And I'm doing it in a way that is more around mindset versus a single identity. And like, for me, that was just important because like, for me, it's like, I don't have to like drive home diversity when I can just do it. I can just be it. When I've had these opportunities to travel around the world to meet all different kinds of people who have impacted like my life and like my life experiences and the way I look at myself. And so it's like, okay, I want to bring in your voice. I want to bring in your voice. And like, can I, for right now, can I give you like the keys to the Studio Simone Instagram and you give us a day in the life of a Studio Simone girl and you show us how you, the skincare you're using, but you also show us your walk. You also show us like one of the five beverages you have at your desk, you know? And so it's like, you show me what you just bought online that you didn't really need. And so it's more of community in that sense of, and then, you know, magenta is like our main color because of what it is supposed to represent around harmony, empowerment, power, and also like balance as well. So I saw your magenta cup, Travelle.
You saw it.
Yeah, I saw it. So cute. but yeah, that's like for me where it's like beauty and community to me is always at stake because ultimately it is the people who are able to foster community within beauty who to me are some of the most powerful players. And oftentimes those people are artistic, they're creative, they have YouTube channels, we often categorize them as influencers and creators, and essentially they are artists. And so I think like for me, when I think about just what I want to get out of all of this, quite frankly, I think that I'm just trying to find better systems and ways for me to exist within this world in a way where I can make a livable wage doing it. And I can also like change some things that I think need to be changed. So yeah, y'all just let me talk.
Listen,
I love it.
You talked about the importance of the sale of products, and we just did an episode on Copaganda, the shows that you watch that talk about police officers, whether they're LAPD Blue or Law and Order and those different kinds of shows. And we talked about how part of the problem on those shows is the need for action and the ways that like they need to be kicking somebody's ass. They need to be shooting through a window. They need to be falling over a truck, like because it makes more interesting television. Right. But it gives us this idea that we need to that police officers are kicking ass all the time. As you talk about like the sale of these products and beauty, I think about how much of the beauty industry is about the sale of products more than it is about like what we need or what is required for us, even from like a skincare perspective. And I'm curious about how like it being such a commercialized industry, how it impacts the community piece that you're talking about, because I've never really thought about community. And I don't know if that makes sense as a question, but like I'm kind of curious about the intersection of community and like the sales of it all.
Yeah, no, I 100% understand your question because I think what the importance, obviously, of sales within beauty. I think what it has done was it has made a lot of creative people who want to be involved in the in some sort of beauty community. I think that it has made them feel that their way in which they should go about that is by centering product and the middle of what they're always are doing and sharing. Like, I think that, like, does that make sense? I feel like, I think that, like, when I, you know, there, when I think about the push that we've had around creators, the creator economy, even specifically within beauty, whether you are a micro influencer, whatever it is, now being a creator is like, there are career steps that someone could tell you that would potentially help you to get to where you want to go. Like, like, this is like, an economy in and of itself. And so when I think of it that way, I think that a part of the formula is like, on the grander scheme, like thinking about where influencers and creators fit into the sales of products and the centering of product. I think that creators and influencers, like, the industry depends on them for a stake of that, in the sense of, you know, like, they are also told that a way that you continue to make an income for yourself and also that you can build your audience is through making all of your content centered around brands, trying new things, before and after, like, you know, certain mechanisms that you can do within beauty that always center even the brand or the product, even over artistry, I would say, or technique. And so what I find and what I love about TikTok is that I like to see technique. I think that literally you can see how makeup processes and routines are changing, and certain things are becoming more techniques are becoming more popular because of what people are showing themselves doing on at home on Instagram versus it's like, I use this concealer. It's like, no, use your concealer at home, but try it this way. And so I think, like, for me, we're starting to see more of that. And, like, even with Studio Simone, tips, tricks, and hacks, people love. Even to me, beyond, like, a tutorial of a before and after. But for me, I think that there's something around, you know, this is what we're led to believe. This is the route that if you want to work in this world, it is about your proximity to a brand. And mm-hmm. also, like, how much visibility or acknowledgement they're giving you. That's where you're supposed to place your value. And, like, I just don't agree with that. I don't want people to feel that way.
Part of what's interesting to me about this is, like, the need to sell new products all the time. And, like, I remember working at an ad agency for a food brand, and, like, they were always trying to, like, figure out the new thing that they could be offering so that they could have something to market, right? And it'd be a new sandwich, it'd be a new drink, it'd be a new side, it'd be a new this, a new that. And, like, there's always a new thing to be introducing so that you can have something to talk about. And it makes me think about, like, how we do that across all kinds of different brands. And with beauty specifically, there's always, like, a new product that's going to help your skin be firmer, or your, you know, to clear up your blemish, or the concealer and that kind of thing. And I'm thinking about it through that lens, that as you're talking about it.
Yeah. Well, there are two reasons to me that come to mind. And one is thinking about investment money and investors, and how I think this is true for any brand or any company, but specifically within beauty, in order to be successful normally within beauty, unless you already are coming for money in some way, you're getting investor money, which means that you likely plan to sell your company one day. And in order to do that, you have to continue to make things versus having a hero product, or, you know, becoming successful specifically off of, like, the one product that you initially launched, or whatever that product is that kind of catapulted you to where you are. Now, when you're in a position where you want to grow or you want to start something, because the route is through investment and because that always involves growth, I think that we're always going to see a lot of launches within beauty. And I think that's only one reason. And then I think the second thing within beauty that to me also gets into the cultural, like, at, like, or, like, the economic element of it, I would say, is that beauty is a low barrier to entry industry. You can be within the beauty industry through going to hair school, owning a beauty supply, owning a hair salon, as a beauty executive, or as someone who starts a beauty brand. as someone who has watched all of the celebrities like make all of the skincare brands and all of the makeup brands, and as annoying as it is, I think that it is really important to remember that like there are normal people every day who really start beauty brands. It's really just that celebrities have the most power and visibility to and are most likely to become successful in what they're doing. But I say all of that more to say that like beauty is a low to barrier to entry. And so I think that when you keep that in mind, in addition to there always being a lot of product, I think that there are a lot of people always looking to either genuinely start something that they believe they're not being served in some way, or because they know that there's a lot of money to make in beauty very, very quickly, depending on what sector you go into. And so even when we think it kind of tying this back to how the environment of the beauty of and of beauty salons and hair salons and barbershops has changed, where they have really evolved from being community centers, places of catching up, of exchanging information, of oftentimes serving as like more than places to do hair, to now, and I felt like this was expedited due to COVID, how you book an appointment today, what those prices look like, what you're willing to risk or what are your non-negotiables have all changed within beauty as hustle culture, as the influencer economy, as like the rise of or the heightened like relevancy of just the individual versus the community has continued to evolve. And so has continued to, as community has honestly become less important. I feel like there's actually so much at stake right now in terms of beauty remaining an authentic place for us to have conversation. So, or an avenue in which to have conversation.
You mentioned earlier the trend of like, you said that you'd be watching TikTok and you can see slowly that like things becoming more popular, different techniques becoming more popular. I wonder, are there any trends in beauty or skincare that like, you know, get on your nerves that you're like, oh no, stop it in its tracks. We don't want it.
Oh, here's something really unpopular that I haven't been able to talk about yet. I hate the box braids with the very neat specific parts. I think that is such in response to, I'm gonna say it again, such a quick and go remedy to getting braids done as quickly as possible versus it being about craft. And to me, all I see when I see the big box braids with the big parts, to me, all I see is almost like, it's like, how many girls can we get in here in the next 24 hours? How many girls can we get in here in the next four? How efficiently can I do this? And so for me, I'm not super into, like literal box braids as a grid. I'm a Sag Virgo Virgo. So I love organization and detail orientedness. Okay. And I'm not into it. I like parts that really like complement the shape of your head. I love that. Mm-hmm. And what's another one? That's kind of like that's like the one right now. I don't actually think that's ever going away.
You said, but it's getting on my nerve.
Yeah.
I mean, I had locks briefly and I always wanted my parts super clean because I always felt like that was the way that you made them look good. So as you're saying, I'm like, that's interesting. I hear that. Darian, tell people where they can find out more.
Oh, wait, I have one more. I have one more. I have to do this one. It will become apparent very shortly. So you used to have this podcast, Darian, called Am I Allowed to Like Anything? All right. Yeah. And you would always end every episode by asking your guests to plus one something, a person, a place, a thing that you wanted to, you know, shine some light on. And so I'm turning it on you. Plus one something in, maybe it's in your beauty routine or something that you think Black folks should be paying attention to in the beauty and skincare space.
Yes, I'm going to plus one a person because they were actually on my mind earlier. Junior Mint is an amazing trans woman and a drag queen who has a really dope makeup brand. I love her palettes. I love the packaging. I love the branding. And I love the true passion that you can tell that she really has for this brand. So check it out. It's Junior Mint with two T's.
Period.
And so just very quickly, I just feel like Junior Mint to me is always the moment.
Period.
Yeah. So that's my shout out. That's my plus one.
I love it. Okay, go ahead, Jared.
We'd love to hear it. Tell people where they can find out more about the work that you're doing and engage it.
Yes, you can learn more about my work on Instagram at Darian, just my first name. And also you'll see in my bio, Studio Simone. It's studio.simone. And we are also on TikTok. So if you are a TikTok girly like me, follow. I'm on there. And thank y'all both so much for just letting me talk my ish.
Thank you for being here.
Absolutely. We want to know what y'all think. Hit us up on social media using the hashtag FanTyFam. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at FanTyPodcast. Coming up, why y'all hate us so much, and listener feedback and dishonorable mentions. We're coming right back.
Yeah.
With Max Fund Drive in the books, we'd like to welcome our new members and say thanks to everyone who's supported us over the years. Welcome. Thanks. And now, on to the sticker sale. A lot of this year's drive gifts and live streams focused on food. We love how food can bring communities together, but not everyone has access to the food they need. So we'll split the proceeds from our sticker sale among 5 U.S. food banks in areas disproportionately affected by poverty. The sale ends Friday, April 14th. Members at the $10 monthly level and above can purchase any stickers they'd like. There's also a special Max Fun sticker featuring Nutsy the Squirrel that all members can purchase. For more info, head to MaximumFun.org/sticker sale. And thanks again for your support.
A man was walking along a beach which represented his life. At his feet were two sets of footprints, his and God's. But looking back down the beach, the man could see that in the hardest parts of his life, there was only one set of footprints. So the man said to God, "Why is there only one set of footprints when times were hard? Where were you?" And God replied, "My precious child, I was in my car listening to the Beef and Dairy Network podcast." The Beef and Dairy Network podcast is a multi-award-winning comedy podcast, and you can find it at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, beautiful people. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. We're going to get into our listener feedback segment shortly, but we did want to give you all an update about the Max Fun Drive, which ended last week. And as you all know, we had our stretch goal of 500 new and upgrading members. And we said that if we got it, that we would learn to swim and document a portion of that experience for you all. And I regretfully would like to announce that not only did we hit 500, we blew 500 out the park. We almost had 600. And so Jared, if you are on the YouTube, you can see his face right now. But if you are not, you need to go on over to the YouTube on Friday when the episode drops, because Jared is not pleased.
I'm thrilled. For our podcasting audience, we thank you so very much for the ways that you've been able to support us throughout the Max Fun Drive.
Absolutely.
I am thrilled about doing this. I cannot wait to do this swimming lesson situation. I love that I can give YouTube something very different with my face than the podcast with my voice.
Oh my God.
I gotta say, I'm grateful for the love and support of the show. Not thrilled about what we're gonna have to do here.
I think I might have
said on the show last week that y'all ambushed me with that. Did I say that? Or maybe it was on Instagram Live.
Yes, you did. Okay.
It was on Instagram Live.
You said it. The people know.
But yeah, this was some bullshit.
And you tweeted about it. We know, you know, you feel like we ambushed you.
Y'all did.
We get it. And we did.
Because that video was out hours after our taping. Y'all, this was a coordinated attack.
And we did.
You can call me a conspiracy theorist if you like.
Yeah, where's your tin hat?
But
where is it?
My tin hat?
Yes, you know, the conspiracy theories. The people with, they, okay, anyway, all right.
I was ready to make like a pizza joint joke or with Hillary Clinton or something, but.
We are going to.
Well, I mean, pizza. Yes. Have
oh,
we met?
Not this. Oh, we are two different types of girlies.
That's kind of the point here.
Okay, let's get to our listener feedback for this week. We have an Instagram DM from Marnie, she, her, hers. This is Marnie, and I am a white woman, so I usually am only...
Not with these two H's.
So I usually am only a listener and try not to chime in with my irrelevant thoughts. Glad you know your place. I am sadly going to miss the Instagram live today, though I am a member of the Fantai fam, and I did just upgrade my donation this week. Shout out to you. I have a question for you. The singer Tems has received some negative attention for wearing a dress to the Oscars, which in theory obstructed the view of the person seated behind her. I'm very short and generally can't see over the person in front of me anyways, especially when standing, so I don't really get the big deal about her dress. Do you both feel that the criticism of her dress choice is warranted, and is it anti-Black? I have been feeling that a white woman would not get the same negative attention for this, but I want to know what you both think.
This is one of those stories I was really hoping to not have to talk about. And like halfway through this email, I was like, oh, we're doing this. Okay. I think Tems was wrong. And I think the dress was gorgeous. I think in all the photos of her sitting in the audience, she looks amazing. I think it looks really fantastic, but I think it was really inconsiderate for a theater event. I think if it was a dinner and she was sitting at a table, it might have been a little bit different. But I also don't know that, like, I think Tem said this was like her first award show and stuff like that. And so it's like one of those things where it's like, eh, a lesson learned. But you also looked amazing. And those photos you will have forever of you at the Oscars. But I know if I was sitting behind her, I would have been irritated. I would have been so mad.
You know,
and to the last question here about is the criticism of her dress choice warranted, and is it anti-Black? We talked on the Chris Brown, no, on the Cosby, R. Kelly, Michael Jackson episodes about how the sensitivity around these issues gets precarious because white folks like to talk about the stuff that Black folks do, but then start trafficking in anti-Blackness and racism and misogyny and all the other things when it comes to Black folks. And so I haven't seen all of the analysis to know if it's anti-Black, but I'm certain that there is some out there.
I think that if the person sitting behind her was Black, then yes, it's a problem. All right, and now it's time for our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories or people that caught our attention this week.
I love that. Period. Moving on. I think we're good here. Was that everything?
Listen, okay? These are the people or the stories that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out either for their good or their foolishness. Go for it, Jared.
I want to give a call back to an honorable mention that I gave here before to a documentary on HBO Max called The Beauty of Blackness, which is directed by one of our good friends here on the show, and more on that in a second. It is a documentary, though, on HBO Max that kind of covers the history of Blackness. They say in 1973, Eunice Johnson, the founder of Ebony and Jet, launched the first national cosmetics brand created exclusively for Black women. This film chronicles Fashion Fair's past and follows its new leadership as they reinvent the brand. We've had Tiffany Johnson on this show before. She's a good friend of mine. She's like the annoying little sister I didn't want. And I love her. And she is the director on this documentary. It's really, really fantastic. You can get it on HBO Max. Again, it's called The Beauty of Blackness. And I think that's everything that I have.
Great. Because, you know, you like to go long.
Oh, wait. No, I did have another doc here. we pull out the scroll and like begin.
Okay, I want to give a quick shout out to GLAAD Honors. GLAAD Honors is was an event from last week put on by the communities of color vertical, if you will, from GLAAD, led by Deshaun Usher. It was an event before the GLAAD Awards to honor and recognize the Black nominees. And, you know, I want to say every like, you know, up and coming, but also super established, like, Black queer actor, actress, influencer, journalist, screenwriter, person was in the room.
Not every.
There's an asterisk there, but whatever. Well,
I didn't go. Sorry.
You didn't go, and that was your choice. But guess what? Everybody was there.
Wow, the erasure of the light-skinned Black man in this is just...
And so shout out to them.
I said the light-skinned Black man, and...
There were other light-skinned Black men. Yeah. Anyway, there was... It was oh, the... You. Well... Anyway, so shout out to them. It was a great event. It was wonderful just to, like, be in a space with, like, you know, the who's who, if you will, of Black queer Hollywood. And that's at various levels. Also want to shout out the folks who were at the Region 4 conference for NABJ in Phoenix at Arizona State University this past weekend. I met a... young person whose name I can't remember in this moment, and I did not write it down, who is, you know, familiar with the work and familiar with the podcast. So shout out to you. Can't remember your name, but you know who you are. And then last but not least, coming up on April 15th, my third convention, conference, whatever that I've been planning, the Arts and Entertainment Media Institute for NABJ will be April 15th here in Los Angeles at Loyola Marymount University. If you are a journalist, reporter, writer, influencer, content creator, check out our program, see who we all have coming, see if there's something that you feel like you could take away from the program that we're offering, and join us April 15th. Jarrett will be there live and in color moderating a morning keynote with the editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter, Nikisa Mumbi Moody. Other faves from the Fanti fam will be there, Shar Jossel, Ryan Mitchell, et cetera, et cetera. And check it out. Absolutely. Thank you so much. And now it's time for... Black history is happening every day. Take a quick trip with me to the world of sports ball, all right? I actually want to shout out someone who Darian already shouted out, and that is Angel Reese, who led her team, the Louisiana State University Tigers, to their first women's basketball championship over the weekend. The score, I am told, was 102-85 over Iowa. The Tigers' 102 points were the most in a Division I women's title game ever. Also wanted to shout out Flajay. I don't know if any of you out there watched the rap game on Lifetime, but Flajay was one of the young rappers on the show, one of the seasons of the show, and she also is on the LSU team. So shout out to her. But, you know, I wanted to, you know, give some sports stuff every now and again for, you know, those of you who like that type of thing.
So what people can never see is Travell's not really a reader of the script unless it's something that they wrote specifically. But, like, you, the way that you read this word for word to make sure you got it right about the sports. Like, 102 over 85 over Iowa. The Tigers is 100. I was like... I see you, listen.
Okay, like, y'all not gonna tell me I got the sports stuff wrong. Let me write that out. My God, today. But shout out to them.
I should also say, as we want to plug a few things where y'all can find us elsewhere, I should also name Kiana Moore, with the other director of the Beauty of Blackness documentary, Tiffany Johnson and Kiana Moore. I want to shout out to both of those Black women who directed that documentary. I forgot to mention that I am currently on the bonus content episode of Maximum Film discussing Brother to Brother. I did that with the folks over there a few weeks ago, and it just recently came out. It was a lot of fun. I had not actually seen Brother to Brother. And the book has been sitting on my desk for a really long time. And it was great to watch the film if you're not familiar with it. Travell and I are going to be on an upcoming episode. What's the face?
No face. Keep going.
Also, Travell and I are going to be on an upcoming episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour over on NPR. We're going to be talking about someone we've talked about here before years ago, in a way that really, really justifies what's about to happen for them tomorrow. Not justifies, but like it's quite the full circle moment. We're going to be talking about Monique and her new Netflix special that will be dropping just right before this episode comes out.
Oh, yes. My God, today.
So on Tuesday, as we're recording, as Trump is being indicted and arraigned, if y'all
shout out to the writers.
If y'all haven't, I texted Travell this morning. If y'all didn't listen to What a Day on Tuesday morning, the episode is called It's Arraigning Men. And I thought It's Arraigning Men was kind of genius. So check out What a Day. Check out What a Day with Travell. Check out Pop Culture Happy Hour with the two of us talking about Monique. Check out Maximum Film where I'm talking about Brother to Brother. We hope y'all have a fantastic day, a fantastic week, whatever time it is that you're listening to. Unless you have other plans, you can go to check us out now on YouTube. Type in fantypodcast.com for more information on the show to get past episodes. We are new on YouTube, but we have 3 years of content on past topics on the podcast feed. So go check us out there. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, we're at fantypodcast on the Instagram, on the Twitter, and on the TikTok. You can use the hashtag FantiFam to jump into the conversation, or you can shoot us an email, fanti@maximumfun.org.
And maybe you're thinking to yourself, darn, I really wish I could have supported them doing the Maximum Fun drive, but my tax check ain't came in yet, so I couldn't do it. Mm. Well, guess what? You can still become a member at maximumfun.org/join. You don't need to be there for the drive. Now, you won't get any of the fabulous perks and whatnot, but that's all right. You will have still contributed to us creating this wonderful good and great, okay, every single week. Shout out to you. Our music, as always, is brought to you by the Grammy Award-winning Corece. That's CORE, wherever you get Slayworthy audio. Our graphics are done by Ashley Wynn and the folks over at Moonhouse Creative. Our editor is Anne-Marie Huber. Producer is Palmira Muniz. Pew, 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 pew.
I was gonna say, in our Instagram live the other day, someone was like, "Are you jealous of Laura and the air horns?" And Palmira said, "I have to earn it." And I was like, "Has she earned it yet? Maybe. Oh, we'll do this. Our producer is Palmira Muniz, and we'll let it grow. We'll let it grow over the course of the year. Our singer producer is Laura Torsha. Yes. Is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
LAPD Law or LAPD Blue or something. And Laura said, unless there's a new version that's out.